This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
No matter where you stand in the clinical research and drug development lifecycle, the view is often the same. Clinical research and drug development take too long, cost too much, and could do so much better in delivering more treatments to more patients more quickly. There's no more pressing urgency than the present time, as we all know. So what can we do about it? One emerging solution is drug repurposing, a field that explores the possibility that drugs approved for certain indications can be developed successfully and approved for additional indications, including, ideally, for COVID-19. For example, ketamine has been used for decades as an anesthetic. In March 2019, the US FDA approved a new formulation of ketamine to treat a specific type of depression. I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of the IA Global Forum. My guest today is Barbara Goodman, the President and Chief Operating Officer of Cures Within Reach, one of the leading and most successful proponents of repurposing to help deliver therapeutic products more quickly to more patients. Thank you for joining us today, Barbara, and welcome.
Thank you for having me today.
Let's start with the basics, if we could. Cures Within Reach, or CWR for short, was founded in 2005, and then in 2008, they changed their focus solely to focus on repurposing. So let's go back to square one, if we could. What was CWR's original mission?
Our work began in 2005 when Partnership for Cures was established as a not-for-profit to carry on the mission of a small private foundation. At the time, we focused on accelerating the discovery of new treatments to improve the quality of life for people with catastrophic diseases. After several years of that work, the organization reviewed all the funded projects that we had done up until that point, and we discovered that the projects that were actually reaching patients were the repurposing projects. And that is when our transition to the current mission began.
At the time, was Cures Within Reach the first organization that specifically focused on this mission, or were there other similar organizations with a similar purpose?
In 2008, when we did that strategic review, there were no not-for-profits focused solely on repurposing that were also disease-agnostic. If you'll recall, the 505(b)(2) pathway was developed by the FDA, and while it was enacted in the late 90s, the first approval took place shortly thereafter, but really that pathway took hold in 2004. So after several years later, at that point, there hadn't yet been a dedicated not-for-profit focused on repurposing, and we saw that as a place in the market that we could fill. We saw it as a faster way to make real impact to serve those patients with unmet medical needs. We're focusing on the disease agnostic, research institution agnostic, and geography agnostic. And there wasn't at the time anyone focused solely on that area. And even today, there's no one focused solely in those areas, truly agnostic in those areas.
You mentioned the FDA 505(b)(2) pathway. In your experience, is that the linchpin of the entire drug repurposing enterprise, if you will?
In the United States, that is certainly a critical regulatory pathway for drug repurposing. Obviously, other countries have their own regulatory pathways. For the United States, it is the 505(b)(2) for drug repurposing. We do focus on other treatments, including device, diagnostics, drug combinations where the 505(b)(2) may not be appropriate.
Well, since you mentioned the U.S. being unique in this regard, are you also active as an organization in other countries outside U.S.?
Absolutely. We do most of our work in North America. About 75%, 80% of our current ongoing projects are in North America. We do have projects outside of the United States and Canada. We have several projects in Europe right now. We signed our first project in Australia earlier this year, and later this calendar year, we're actually expecting to sign 4 projects with researchers based in low and low middle income countries, where we're building capacity for clinical trial research through a program we're calling REGROW, Repurposing Grants for the Rest of the World.
So So just again to set the foundation, what is the difference between drug repurposing and traditional or standard drug development? Just remind us.
If you really think about the difference between de novo and drug repurposing, we think it falls into three key areas: the speed, the cost, and the success rate. From de novo research, it takes about 13 to 15 years. It can easily take up to $2 billion, and some would say it's 5 to 10% success rate. In the drug repurposing side, it can be significantly shorter, in 5 to 11 years. It can be $300 million, $350 million with perhaps a 30% success rate. This happens because the safety, toxicity, pharmacology, and other related studies are completed from the original indication, and that allows clinicians and researchers to go into patients, humans, much faster with either small pilot data or perhaps you need late-stage animal studies. But it is significantly faster to get into humans in a human trial with repurposing over de novo.
So drug repurposing comes with a lower investment, a shorter development time, and a higher probability of success. What's not to like?
That's a great question. We think there's everything to like, and that's why we've been working solely in repurposing for over a decade. I think there are other interesting dynamics like the value creation or the definition of innovation that universities sometimes look at. And to be honest, when a tech transfer office at a university is comparing a small budget that they may have for intellectual property, and they have 100 projects and the university can only pick 20 or 50 to move forward, the repurposing tends not to be seen as innovative as a new drug or de novo research. So it really depends on what your definition of innovation is. We find it to be incredibly innovative and, most importantly, faster to patients.
Are there any intellectual property considerations that apply to drug repurposing? I'm thinking primarily, lack of patent protection for a sufficiently long period of time. Is that an issue at all in drug repurposing?
We actually think there's a lot of great ways to create value in drug repurposing. We've seen a number of different studies that have been done. We've seen a lot of companies take things to market, whether it is through new drug delivery methods, it could be new dosing. We've seen value creation in formulation changes, drug combinations, as well as outside of the intellectual property side, but with market exclusivity that the FDA can provide, there's certainly opportunities to create value.
Turning to the industry and the regulatory bodies, can you tell us how did the therapeutic product development industry and regulators respond to the focus that Cures Within Reach has had on repurposing?
We really see that industry has always been supportive of using existing treatments for new indications, although it's just not often called repurposing. If you think about Viagra, which was originally looked at for hypertension, if you think about Botox, that was originally approved in 1989 for eye diseases and then brought to market for what we know as today for cosmetic use. If you think about Revlimid and multiple myeloma, Gleevec for rare blood cancers that then got added several other indications, those are all extremely great examples of drug repurposing. It's just that industry doesn't necessarily use the word repurposing. What they use instead is what investors and Wall Street tends to like, which is taking proven therapies and enhancing the therapeutic benefit. Or sometimes industry will say that it's taking proven therapies and developing it for a new set of patients. All of those are creating value for patients. They're creating commercial value and are very important in the healthcare ecosystem.
Does the word repurposing have an unfavorable connotation for some people, for in industry? Is this a term that industry prefers to avoid? And why might that be?
I think industry is understandably very cautious as it relates to the occasional off-label use of approved drugs, which industry cannot publicly nor privately can they support. clinicians are allowed to consider off-label use, certainly after publication of validated studies, for example, but industry needs to be extremely cautious, and understandably so. So often, when there may not be commercial value, but there's philanthropic value, which we would know as off-label use, industry understandably needs to be very careful with off-label use generally.
Understood. Okay. Let's get to some success stories. And your website, I note, has a section called Success Stories that summarize the impact of the work of Cures Within Reach. For example, your organization has helped support the funding of over 80 repurposing projects in roughly more or less 50 institutions. And you've demonstrated improvement in 13 diseases to date. So I'm just wondering, do you have a favorite success story? Why is it your favorite?
I have a handful of favorites. My current favorite is one that's actually still in process, but we're seeing really interesting early signs of success. And that's a project that the Department of Defense is actually watching for use in active military. An orthopedic trauma surgeon in Pennsylvania is currently testing a generic multiple sclerosis drug to use as a diagnostic tool to determine whether nerves that are damaged in limb trauma patients are severed or crushed, and allowing an evidence-based decision today by these orthopedic trauma surgeons would allow these patients potentially much, much better outcomes. Cures Within Reach funded a small pilot study of less than 10 patients, but positive results from this could be a game changer with those patients with severe limb injuries, and certainly a game changer for orthopedic trauma surgeons. That's my personal favorite of an ongoing project. I have two other examples. One is in a very, very rare pediatric disease, and the other is in a very large population chronic disease. One of my favorite examples of the small population, rare population, rare diseases, is a rare pediatric immune disorder that these kids 10 years ago, before our research, frequently went to the hospital, the ER. They had many, many doctor's visits. They really had a low quality of life, both for the children and for their families. Cures Within Reach funded late-stage animal studies and then a small human trial at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And the researcher found that two generic pills a day of sirolimus provided these children, and more importantly, their families, with a very improved quality of life. These kids were able to pass adolescence instead of passing away far, far too young. They also reduced the healthcare burden of these families. So our $75,000 investment allowed the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia to raise $1.2 million from the NIH and from others to do the follow-on research. And that's a great example of a generic drug that has extremely high philanthropic value, very little commercial value, but certainly a major impact on patients. At the other end is an example which is today in a large-scale, fully enrolled phase 2 study for type 1 diabetes patients. Very controversial, I'll just say, and we funded a very small phase 1 pilot study using the BCG tuberculosis vaccine that was given twice, not twice a day, but twice, 30 days apart, to less than 10 patients in a phase 1 to help improve the ups and downs of insulin for these type 1 diabetes patients. We funded this Massachusetts General Hospital and Harvard researcher, Dr. Faustin. We funded $100,000 to help fund the animal in the phase 1. The positive results from the phase 1 allowed MassGen to raise over $23 million in private funding from a foundation for the fully enrolled phase 2 that is now ongoing for the FDA registration study. And results of that are expected in a year or two.
These are remarkable stories, Barbara. Thank you for sharing those. And I guess you have many more of those on your website under the Success Stories tab. Fair enough?
Yep, absolutely. And not only do we have those success stories, but we have 21 ongoing projects today, which are understandably mostly on hold due to the pandemic. 20 projects ongoing today of the 80 that we have funded. So more to come.
Well, we'll get to the pandemic in a moment. Let me ask you first, though. You mentioned philanthropic value, commercial value. How does Cures Within Reach balance these two? creating value in philanthropic terms versus creating value in commercial terms. So how do you find a balance between those?
At the end of the day, we are very patient focused. We are supportive of whatever allows the patient to access the repurposed treatment that's proven effective. We work to find the most exciting idea from researchers and clinicians wherever they're based in the world. We use our volunteer community to review and rank and strengthen these clinical trials. We select the ones that have the highest likelihood of success, and then we'll fund those. In 2015, we actually launched an online platform called Cure Accelerator, which is the repurposing research hub to collect, share, and promote repurposing research. We consider ourselves as a not-for-profit one step prior to impact investing. We call ourselves in the impact philanthropy space. We're supportive of those projects that may have commercial value, and we're extremely supportive of those projects getting into industry hands, whether it's a big player, small player, whether it's venture capital or portfolio, to get it into the hands who can bring it to market. And we're certainly supportive of that. At the same time, when there are projects that don't have commercial value, it's a generic for a very small population, like an oral generic drug with no dosing change, we're very supportive of those projects to get the thoughtful, randomized controlled trials that provide the researchers with enough reproducible evidence to support publication or presentations, and then allowing clinicians the data they need to make their own decisions for their patients.
Sounds like the organization really helps researchers navigate funding for this research, and you've just given us some examples. Is there anything more you want to say about that? How do you help researchers, you know, navigate funding, get the funding, use it to a good purpose, or repurpose in this case, I might say?
We really consider ourselves as the catalyzer of these projects that may not otherwise find the funding to get that initial data. We started calling our funding the comeback when funding. Researchers will share these ideas with the NIH, with foundations, with industry, and very often their response is, come back when you have the initial data in humans, or come back when you have the dosing finalized. Come back when you know the drug delivery mechanism is clear. That is the type of funding that we love to fund. It's our favorite, to provide the catalytic funding that supports that next stage. That's exactly why we call ourselves the impact philanthropy model. As you mentioned earlier, some of our metrics, with the over 85 projects that we funded, it's a value of $6 million that we have invested in these projects, which is not a huge amount per project. What we really get excited about is that our $6 million has led to over $49 million in follow-on funding that's been leveraged and raised by our researchers, which means that every dollar that we have funded, researchers have been able to raise eight additional dollars for follow-on research.
Would you say that we are now in a time when, if Cures Within Reach invests, other monies will follow? In other words, your presence in itself attracts additional funding sources.
Sometimes the fact that our funding is there is allowing some of the researchers to go back to industry to get drugs donated. We've seen that several times in the last couple of years. We hope to be that catalytic effect. Oftentimes it's not solely when Cures Within Reach is funding, but it's the data. You have to follow the evidence. And so if we can fund a small pilot study of 10 patients, 5 patients, 20 patients, that allows the data necessary for the NIH, for industry, for other players to invest, that's exactly where we see our role. And it's an exciting place to be.
I'm curious about one thing. We've talked about drug repurposing, and that's what many people talk about. But are you also active in device repurposing?
We are absolutely open to not only drug repurposing, but devices, diagnostics, and other treatment tools, not just drugs. Certainly 75% of our projects are in the drug side, but one of our success stories is actually funding of a medical device that in 2009, we funded at the University of Wisconsin to test a neurostimulator device for use in multiple sclerosis patients. This study was successful and led to some traumatic brain injury patients being studied. We invested just over $50,000 in the project, It allowed the University of Wisconsin to receive over $4 million from the DOD, from the Department of Defense, for the research. It was then acquired by a company that was later acquired by another company, which happens. What's really exciting is this device, which is called PONS, owned by Helius, just received breakthrough status from the FDA earlier this month, and they're hoping to get FDA approval later this year for multiple sclerosis. And the Canadian FDA approved it several years ago for traumatic brain injury. Another really exciting example that Cures Within Reach hasn't funded, but certainly one we're watching, is another device repurposing example that comes from a Chicago-based startup company called Attune Medical, which has an FDA-approved product called EnsoETM for controlling patient temperature management and helping patients by cooling them after cardiac arrest and stroke. There was a recent clinical trial led by a British doctor that showed excellent success in reducing esophageal injury that occurs during cardiac ablation. The data from this trial was just presented at several different conferences. It was over 120 patients, and it's a great example of what repurposing in medical devices can bring to patients.
Great. Now let's come to the big question. Can Cures Within Reach help in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic?
We really see drug repurposing and the clinical trials going on as possible treatment for patients is the opportunity for fast-track cures for patients with COVID. As of today, there are over 645 trials ongoing right now in over 50 countries using repurposed drugs. These are drugs that are already safe and effective in one indication and being tested in randomized controlled trials in pilot studies for COVID. Cures Within Reach started seeing small pilot studies coming out of China, out of Thailand, and other Asian countries very, very early in 2020, doing small pilot studies testing repurposing treatments using HIV antiviral drugs, using remdesivir, using the antimalarials we've heard a lot about, as well as several other flu treatments and rheumatoid arthritis treatments. All those pilot studies from the Asian countries that saw the pandemic first then became larger confirmatory studies in Europe and certainly now ongoing in the United States. We really do see not only the remdesivir that got emergency use authorization several weeks ago, but we're seeing these clinical trial results being published ongoing on a rolling basis. We really do see several other treatments expected to have positive results over the next several weeks and months. In addition, there's even a repurposing vaccine opportunity. It's the same example I gave you for type 1 diabetes coming out of Massachusetts General Hospital. That same BCG tuberculosis vaccine is in two different ongoing randomized controlled trials for a vaccine for the COVID-19 right now.
A final question, Barbara. In the current pandemic context, is it changing the drug repurposing landscape for other diseases that are not due to the coronavirus?
We actually think other disease areas have been looking at repurposing as possible treatments well before the pandemic, most frequently seen by the rare disease community, but certainly in oncology, in autoimmune diseases, certainly pediatrics, which often don't get regulatory approval for the pediatric side, as well as many neurodegenerative diseases and mental health. We're very hopeful that as the pandemic slowly moves behind us and once it's under control, that the general public and the philanthropic community much more broadly will be able to engage with Cures Within Reach to use our impact philanthropy model to find treatments that impact their personal families. In addition, we're expecting later this year to launch several projects in the infectious disease space. We're looking to launch funding opportunity RFPs to impact veterans and active military, to fund proposals led by female researchers, projects to impact rare diseases. We really see exciting opportunity to continue to build the repurposing projects beyond just COVID-19, infectious diseases, looking at antivirals to solve some of our most pressing healthcare issues today.
So it seems like as we talk here in mid-May 2020, it looks like the field of drug repurposing is sort of being given new life under the pandemic and causing people to maybe take a second and a third look at repurposing as a very useful way to get to therapies more quickly. Would you agree with that?
I wouldn't say second or third life. I think we've always seen it as a life. I think the pandemic is shining a light where the general public now understands repurposing industry. We see there's a real opportunity to continue what industry is leading right now, and that's extremely strong collaborative nature. Everyone is working together, industry, the regulators, the philanthropic community, the researchers. We really hope that continues, and certainly hope to springboard the unmet medical needs of other patients beyond the pandemic and continue the collaboration that we're seeing right now today.
Perhaps a brand new age of collaboration, if I may put it that way. Well, Barbara, those are all my questions. Thank you so much for your time and insights today, and I wish you very good luck with the important work of your organization.
Thank you so much for having me.
For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.